Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Well, hello, and thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, Medical Intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic of today's show is actually a suggestion from a listener, Nancy Muller, wanted to know what happens energetically when an organ is surgically removed. In her email, she wrote, since you have shared on your show that certain organs hold certain emotions, what happens when an organ is removed? Is the emotional charge also removed, or does it continue to energetically linger, even though it doesn't have a home? Well, thanks, Nancy, for this suggestion. It really is a great question. It's one that I'm asked often in my readings and even when I'm doing my workshops on health and healing, is that what really does happen? Where does this emotion go? I have also found that as part of my work, is it's a common question that I'm asked when people are really trying to make the decision as far as facing surgery, or they've made the decision for surgery, is that what are they going to do? How can they be sure that whatever was this emotional charge, this kind of allergen, pathogen of emotion, what can they do to really see that that also is packed in that organ when that thing is removed? It's kind of like packing for a trip. So I want to thank you, Nancy, for the suggestion. I think everyone will find it an interesting show. If you have a suggestion for me for a show topic, you can visit my website at www.reitberger.com. Send it to me via my website. If I use it on air, I'll send you a copy of my CD, Enlightenment, The Path to Personal Liberation. Let's do that again. Enlightenment, The Path to Personal Liberation. On the CD, I talk about the seven stages of evolution. As evolution is not only behavior, but thought, emotions, everything that we experience, cells in our body, emotions, thoughts, beliefs that we have, everything has a life cycle and goes through these seven stages. And then also how going through these seven stages not only change the perception you have of yourself, but literally change the perception that you have in your life itself. And what I've found in the work with the seven stages of evolution is the liberation comes not so much from the removal of old patterns and old situations, but it comes from the fact that there's tremendous amount of self-forgiveness around it. And what it does is it helps you see that even in those times where life isn't nearly as pleasant as we'd like it to be, or in those traumas, that there really is a purpose and a meaning behind them. And the seven stages help you understand that. So I hope that you will send me your suggestion. I will try to fit it into the show schedule. And again, if I use it on air, I'll contact you and send you my CD, Enlightenment, The Path to Personal Liberation. Also, I'm going to be taking your calls and sharing my medical intuitive skills with you. So if you have a question for me about your health or something that's going on in your life, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and as well as Canada. International callers, it's a number that you can use as well, but of course you have to dial your international calling card. As your calling code. As a medical intuitive, my job really is to look at anything that's malfunctioning in the body from a variety of perspectives and looking at all of the contributors that could be responsible for the formation of that malfunction in the physical body. That means that I look for energetic imbalances, mental and emotional roots, and then actual malfunctioning in the physical body itself. Then I always like to liken myself to a puzzle master. Once I get all of that information via energetically and the openness of someone to share with me, then what I do is I take all of those puzzle pieces and then I put them together. And then the goal is to offer a person a comprehensive picture of what they can do in order to prepare if it's in the case of surgery, or what they can do from a multiple level standpoint to be able to obtain the healing that they're really looking for. The interesting thing when we look at illness from an energetic perspective or a soul perspective first and then work out to the physical body, then it doesn't make any difference what level we're working on, whether we're working on it physically, emotionally, mentally, energetically, or even trying to bring our soul to expression, meaning finding purpose in whatever we're experiencing. So in the case of looking at illness the way I do, you can start anywhere. But you have to know what maybe that emotion is. And that's difficult for us to do for ourselves. So a lot of times we have to turn to a friend. We have to turn to a physician. We turn to a clergy. We turn to someone of mental health care, a psychotherapist or a psychologist or anything. We just need sometimes, especially at that emotional level, to be able to step back and get somebody else's perception. That doesn't mean that we have to take it, you know, like it's absolute cast in stone, but it's a way to provoke thought. It helps the mind get caught out of those, step out of those patterns of ruminating over the problem and only seeing it one way. And one of the things I find is the emotional release work, once you identify that emotion, it really does make the healing process happen at a faster pace. And that's one of the things I found, of course, over the 29 years I've literally been, you know, preparing and using my medical intuitive skills, and that I can tell you that behind every illness, we have some hidden meaning, and we can find that if we just can step outside of ourselves, or be able to find someone that can help us with that. When I go in and I look for emotions, really the first thing that the energy tells me is this emotion is something that is a common theme of an emotion that somebody has in their life. Also that it's an emotion that they suppress on a consistent basis. And what that means is that suppressed emotion basically gets buried deep down inside, and it gets buried to the point where it actually festers, meaning that it can cause bitterness, cynicism, resentment, irritation, anger. It can create and fuel a lot of the fears that we have, or create new fears. And eventually what occurs over that suppressed emotion or that pattern of thinking, maybe it's the same thought around a negative attitude, then what it does is it just builds upon itself. The immune system, while it can't really read an emotion per se as an allergen, at an energetic level, and the fact that the pituitary gland actually responds and reacts to emotions, that sends the message to the immune system, listen, we've got a problem. I need you to go find something. The immune system doesn't know what it's looking for, and one of the difficulties for it to find is to find that emotional, energetic quagmire, as I call it, that psychological quagmire, or that festering of the emotion that basically is building on itself, where it causes us to become irritated with ourselves or to be able to turn on ourselves. I have found that chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic illnesses specifically, have to do with a low grade of irritation. We may not even be consciously aware of it, but it is something we're irritated with, and primarily that irritation is with ourselves. I've also learned that when an organ is removed, it doesn't necessarily mean that the emotional charged energy in that organ is going to be removed when it's actually taken out. So how do you ensure that the charge is going to not return? Well, let me use an example. I'm going to use the gallbladder because it's one of the organs that's commonly removed because it's being diseased or because there's gallstones. So as a medical intuitive, in my world, the gallbladder itself is where we hold our secrets. It's where we actually, meaning that they're the things that we store, the things that are really bad that happened to us, the things that we're ashamed of in our behavior, maybe the things that we're ashamed of that happened to us, and then also the events and the relationships and the experiences that really have caused us deep hurt, things that we don't really want other people to know that has happened to us, because it'll make us feel vulnerable, and it can also feed our fears. In the case of the gallbladder, the emotion we store inside centers around our relationships with other people and their actions. That's important to hear, that the emotion that's stored in the gallbladder is really around relationships we have with other people. They really aren't self-motivated and self-directed, which is in the case of the spleen, and the spleen, of course, being the master organ and gland that really is part of the the importance of our immune system ability to function optimally. When we get irritated with ourselves, then it can affect the immune system, the spleen. When we're irritated with others, that irritation festers and builds up in the gallbladder. The emotion that's held in the gallbladder is bitterness, which if suppressed, festers into resentment, another strong emotion that's responsible for many of the ailments and the aches and pains we feel, and then also the formation of negative attitudes and many of the irritants that we have. If those irritants aren't dealt with, meaning that we find a way to constructively communicate the emotions that we're feeling inside, they can actually fester and continue to build on themselves. And then this building of selves metaphorically can manifest itself in the form of gallstones itself. Stones in the body represent an emotion suppressed so long that it's causing us to believe that life is hard, times are hard, or forgiving is hard, or the relationships that we have are hard. As a result, we become rigid in our thinking. We're really fearful of being vulnerable and opening ourselves up in a relationship because we're afraid that what's stored in the gallbladder and those memories are going to somehow be triggered. And then what we're going to do is we'll find ourselves not being in sync with ourselves and being at odds with ourselves. The mental metaphor of the gallbladder is the gall of people to act that way, the gall of people to treat me that way, the gall of people to be able to hurt me that way, the gall of people to take advantage of me that way, and the gall of people to disappoint me that way. Those are, as a medical intuitive, the metaphors that when I energetically touch a gallbladder, it literally will say, Carol, I just can't believe the gall of people to be able to take advantage, to be able to hurt and do the things that they do or to say they love. And yet they use love sometimes as a weapon of mass destruction. That's how the organs and glands talk to me. I mean, if you ever watch the movie Dr. Doolittle, will the animals talk to Dr. Doolittle? I'm kind of like where the organs and glands talk to me. Energetically, every time we experience the same situation or even something similar, and meaning that we interact with someone that basically lets us down or hurts us, we even become more bitter. And then the more bitterness we have, the more resentful. And you can see how it's kind of a vicious cycle that we can get ourselves caught up in. And if we're not really mindful, meaning where we have our head and our heart, our brain and our heart being in unison and in cooperation and communicating with each other, then what we're going to do is we're going to maybe miss that all this gallbladder represents and the uncomfortableness of it is, if it's starting to first rear its head, is we just need to go and look for an emotion. Basically, what are we bitter about in life? Where is that cynicism? And where is that resentment? And then one question that I always suggest in readings when I'm working at this level with the gallbladder is to tell someone to go create a safe space. And there's a lot of tools to be able to do that. One of the safe places is here you are in between you and the event that you're going to look at, or the emotion of bitterness is this beautiful plate glass window that is clean. It has no bugs. It has no dust. It has nothing on it. So you can see clearly the emotion and you stand on one side and you can literally ask a part of your body that isn't feeling right, what emotion are you feeling right now? And it will talk to you. It will tell you. The body does talk. And it can talk energetically by getting that ugh that we sometimes get where we feel like energy is being drained from us. Maybe we get a little bit churning in our stomach, that knot in the stomach and so forth. And then again, we just go in and ask. We can ask, is this bitterness? Is this cynicism? Is this resentment? Is this anger? What is it? And I will tell you, your body will tell you. Your soul uses your body via emotions to be able to tell you. So if we continue to hold these things inside, what will happen is the gallbladder is just going to start malfunctioning. And then what we'll do is we'll try to deal with it physically. We'll watch the foods we eat. Interestingly enough, one of the first colors of foods that we have to watch for if we have a sensitive gallbladder is anything red. Well, red represents anger. And so a lot of people can't do nightshades of tomatoes if they have gallbladder issues. They need to stay away from acidic things such as cranberries. So what it is the metaphor is that it's red. You have to watch it. We try to manage it through the physical body and foods and diet and so forth. But step back, and you know, we're all our own medical intuitives if we really could step back from ourselves and just say, oh my gosh, I can't eat red fruits and vegetables, and red is the color of anger. What can I do? What can I do? What can I change? Yet even when the gallbladder is removed, if we don't find ways to deal with that emotional memory that's stored in the cells in that area and find a way to forgive ourselves and others who have hurt us, then what'll happen is before the surgery, that emotional charge will, of course, prepare itself for removal. But if we don't do the psychological aspect of it, then what will happen is that even with the gallbladder removed, the cells will actually store that emotion. And then lo and behold, we can have phantom gallbladder discomfort. We can have phantom issues that can surface in the other part of the body. So I've had a lot of people say to me, you know, Carol, what do I do with this? Well, you spend a little bit of time with yourself. The ancient metaphysicians said the secret to healing is to know thyself. That means that we have to take time for self-care. We have to take time for reflection and contemplation. Create your safe place. If that's the plate glass window, put it up there. Dialogue with your body. Ask your soul for the emotions. Ask your body for it. And then once you recognize it, you want to pack it in that gallbladder, just like you're packing for a trip. And when that gallbladder goes, that emotion goes. And you can start this preparation. I'm going to share in the next segment some things you can do from a 2 week to the actual day of, and then 24 hours afterwards. Because when we have something removed in the body, we actually have a 24-hour window to pack that area with something very important, and that's self-love. And if you have trouble with self-love, then let's do self-forgiveness. And if you have trouble with self-forgiveness, let's do self-acceptance. All three of those, self-love, self-forgiveness, self-acceptance. Pack it in there. Do it before you go into surgery. Be sure that when you come out of it, that you have either your tapes that you're listening to on your, through earphones, or you just say to yourself, I love myself, I love myself, and woo, it's gone, yay, wahoo, whatever it is. And you just want to put that full of love and forgiveness and acceptance. And it's absolutely amazing. Not only does it help heal the emotional aspect very rapidly, but I found over the course of my 29 years, it actually speeds up the healing process itself. So very, very interesting. Nancy, thank you. It's a wonderful topic. I am going to be talking about it more as I continue through the second segment of the show. But right now I want to do the second thing that I really love the most, or maybe it's the first thing, is I want to start taking calls. Hi, Ann from Seattle. How can I help you? Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I guess I don't have a specific organ to talk about.
Okay.
But one thing I'll bring up is cells. I had abnormal cervix cells taken out in a LEAP procedure, I think 2 months ago. And I just wanted to ask if there's something more that I could or should be doing?
Yes and no. Excuse me. I always talk in riddles. Everybody goes, oh, come on, Carol. A lot of what you've done has been tremendous. It feels like that you're approaching this as you did from a conventional method, but you feel like you're doing a lot of energy work, a lot of balancing, chakra balancing. Are you doing Reiki or something, sweetie? There's something that you're doing energetically. Acupuncture?
Yep, acupuncture. It's been life-changing.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. So what I have in that yes answer is I have all that chi that is basically coming through the crown of your head, flowing freely through your body into that first chakra, into that chakra that needs to belong. It's the fear around survival that each one of us has. And what I do is I have a good, healthy flow of chi. What that's doing from an energetic standpoint is that it really is helping your body revitalize itself the way it needs to. It's adding a lot of positive energy into the cells to where they have a lot of vitality. And your chemistry of your body as a result of this vitality is actually changing to support the fact that now you have more healthy cells, less unhealthy cells that are getting the fuel they need. And my sense is that any unhealthy cells that would be reproduced and would go to that area aren't going to be able to find home. They won't be able to live longer than their natural cycle. So great job. The one thing that I do find in the no part of what I was talking about, and it isn't an absolute no, because I know that you're working at emotional level, but one of the things, sweetie, as a medical intuitive, and it's interesting because I was talking about the gallbladder, one of the things that we hold as females is shame. We hold that shame emotionally in our uterus and our cervical area, in the vaginal area. We try so hard to be able to be all things to all people. And at a very early age, we find out that we can't really do that. Then we go in and we start looking at what can I do to change? How can I be able to, you know, help do something that people are going to love me more or going to be able to accept me more or be, you know, just kind of fitting into this whole clan that we're in. And one of the things that I always find with any kind of activity, whether it's fibroids, abnormalities in the cells, anything is that there's some remnants of some shame.
Sure.
And that shame, all I can say to you is you know what? I know this may not be the most eloquent thing to say on the air, but what you want to do is you want to breathe out shame. You want to sweat out shame through, some aerobic exercise. And you know what, honey? You just want to, you know, remove it through the urine. Just get rid of it. That's the three ways that we literally remove toxins. We remove emotions from the body is that we do it through our breath, through the pores of the skin, or through urine. So just go in and do a little bit of work on that. In fact, you know what? Your acupuncturist, when I'm feeling your acupuncturist, is very holistic. Oh my gosh. What a wonderful intuitive your acupuncturist is. Ask your acupuncturist when you feel comfortable. It feels like a her. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm going to three.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
There's one, sweetie, that you really feel close to.
Can say names? Is that so I would know which one or no? Best not.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Ask your body.
Okay.
If you are comfortable giving me first names, I can tell you who it is based on your energy.
Because okay, I'm going to a male Chinese acupuncturist, so it's probably not that one, although he's wonderful. And
He is. He's very methodical. He's very by the book. That's part of the healing that deals with the physical body. You're absolutely right. That's not him.
The two females are Vicky and Roxanne.
Roxanne.
Thank you. Okay. And may I mention a name of someone who's helped me do healing work to see? She kind of tries to protect me because I'm very mm-hmm. sensitive.
Yes, you are. this is a tremendous amount of trust. I want to acknowledge that to do this on air, to do this, sweetie, you know, gold stars to you. Okay, so let's go in. The person, why don't you give me the name?
Catherine.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if it's healthy for me to work with her or if it's not. I guess.
Well, you've outgrown her.
Okay. Thank you. The acupuncture has really helped with that.
Yeah. So. She's very, very good. She was kind of that safe haven, that harbor in the storm where you were. She really did a lot of stuff. Your energy matched at that time. But sweetie, in the last 6 weeks, you're light years different than if I had done some reading on you 6 weeks ago.
Okay. Got it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks for calling me. Have a great day.
Okay.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi. You're welcome. Hi, Jill from California. Hi. You called me last week.
Yeah, I did.
Well, good. You are on, sweetie. How can I help you?
Hey, I kept thinking why I lost, the call got lost twice last week was because I felt really nervous about doing this on the air. So wow. I thought that maybe the universe was taking care of that for me.
Well, you know what? I agree with you, sweetie. It was like you hadn't formed your words yet. It was like you were still trying to kind of use maybe this as a sounding board, kind of like throw a word out. Whoa, that didn't really work. Well, whoa, that one worked, and you were forming sentences. So, but today I can feel like you are ready to ask. So how can I help you?
Okay. Well, of course, it ties in exactly with why I'm calling, because I'm calling about a thyroid issue in particular. And so from what I understand, there's a lot to do around, speaking up and getting words out and so forth. So anyway, it's the specific reason I'm calling, although I've just been, I'm so glad I got turned on to you because it's just been amazing listening last week and so far this week. So there's so much more. But in this moment, I'm calling because maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I got diagnosed with a thyroid nodule.
Mm-hmm.
And it was small and just kind of keep your eye on it kind of thing. I went to a head and neck / endocrinologist a couple times a year. Went for my last checkup. I think it was right before summer, and it's grown to 2 inches by 2 inches. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to operate from the beginning. This is a very Western, you know, that's mm-hmm. what we do. And I kept saying, oh, no, it doesn't feel right, and I want to try to work on my diet and so forth to see if I can create change. And it has grown significantly over these 4 or 5 years to 2 inches by 2 inches. And she said, I just really don't feel comfortable with the biopsy showing the whole thing. And so I got my courage up and I set an operation, and I literally canceled it a few weeks before because I just feel so, so scared to go under general anesthesia, to have an operation on my neck. I'll add that I have 3 young children, and that's what mm-hmm. a lot of the fear is tied around, if something happened to me type of thing. And I have more fear about the operation than about this thing living in my body. Yeah. But a dear friend turned me on to you, and I wanted to call and see what you had to say.
Well, thank you for that. The thyroid nodule that you have is benign. The fact that it's growing, think of it as a toxic dump site, honey. And basically, like any toxic dump site, there's going to continue to be waste and residual. From a physical standpoint, the nodule that you're working with is tied to the immune system and is actually a part of a suppressed immune system. And so from that standpoint, if you're going to continue to try to deal with it from a physical standpoint, you're going to have to go in and look at it from an immune system disorder that is going to be able, you heard me clear my throat for you. I'll tell you why I did that. I would like to think that it's like, okay, was that really you, Carol, or is that really Jill? Well, honey, it's you. So what it is that you don't have enough information. My sense is that I would be remiss if I didn't say this. I would encourage you to take it further to explore the surgery. And the reason for that is that you've done so much work over the course of time. From an emotional, psychological standpoint, your toxic dump site needs to have either some microbes added to it to be able to break it back down into its natural, you know, form of well-being, or it's going to need to be removed. The most important thing that I find with it is that it's affecting the soft connective tissue. It's affecting that kind of that swallowing aspect of it. It isn't necessarily getting food from the cells around it, but it's creating enough discomfort in the area that your mind is mentally aware of it and it's fixating on it. And so what I would do is that in order to make this work for you, you've got to go in and look at any self-directed anger. That's the first and foremost thing. You know, that doesn't mean that it's for, you know, 4 years of therapy or anything. Just what is irritating you about yourself? That's the first place. Second place is to go in and consider the surgery itself and then go back to the doctor. You don't have enough information. You don't know what to expect. My sense is that what's going to occur with the biopsy, with everything else, is that this will remain at that benign, non-critical state, but it will continue to grow.
Uh-huh.
So the other part of it is that the thing that you've done the most is that you are learning to set boundaries.
Yes, I certainly am.
But what I do ask of you is to start speaking kindly to yourself. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean being a Pollyanna. It doesn't mean, you know, that part where you're going to go in and just take on that kind of attitude that life is, you know, just everything is joyful. Everything is really, really wonderful. Everything, blah, 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 you know, because it really isn't. But when you get caught up in a place where you find yourself going, what did you just do?
Uh-huh.
That's what you want to stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to stop. The general anesthetic aspect of it, find out some information on that. You do have some sensitivities. You will want to get more information on general anesthesia. You will want to talk if you decide to go and even explore it. I'm not saying that you have to do it, anything. My sense is, and again, I'd be remiss, my sense is that it's something that will continue to grow, and it's something that at some point in time you're going to have removed, Jill.
Uh-huh.
And it just depends on when you want that, sweetie. But go ahead.
I was just going to ask, when you've said a couple of times about finding out more about the general, what more would there be to find out?
Well, what you want to do is you want to know exactly what you're going to be given. You have a tremendous sensitivity in your stomach. Are you going to have any kind of, a response or reaction after the general anesthesia? Are you going to get sick? Are you going to throw up? What are you going to do? How quickly is this going to be able to remove from your body? What can you do to be able to help remove it from the body? That's a lot of the pre-work that you can do to build up your immune system to be able to get that, it's just a nodule. It's just a lump. We just need to get it out. It isn't that it's pervasive. It's like going in and removing a wart off of a finger. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay, sweetie. Go ahead and ask.
I was just going to say, you don't see anything unsafe about me going under. About me, really, I think the bottom line here is me, you hear about people not coming back out. That
right.
is really my bottom line, huge fear.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Every single one of us has that. Go find any information you can that can help quell that thought. And then visualize yourself coming out, doing the things. This isn't your exit clause, sweetie. What you're dealing with isn't cancer, honey. I don't know if the doctor has literally said that to you, but I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to tell you that this is a benign nodule. It's a toxic dump site, and that it's not going to be, the exit clause of your life. Now, I can say that to you, but you have to go in, and that has to be truth to you, Jill. And anybody that you work with, sweetie, you've got to trust that truth aspect of it. The other thing is, ask the anesthesiologist when you talk to him, how long are you going to be out? Talk to the doctor more. How long literally is this surgery? What kind of complications are there? What can I expect when I come out of it? You just, where it feels like, sweetie, is that you can't embrace it because you just don't have enough information.
Uh-huh.
And once you get that information, then you're in a better position, Jill, to make that decision. If you choose not to, you're better informed to not make that decision.
Yeah.
But not having the information, honey, is part of the problem, excuse me for saying it that way, of what created the nodule in the first place.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So. I did have a little when she told me in the early summer, I really needed to do this. I just looked at her and I said, has anyone ever died on your operating table or ever on the anesthesiologist table that you use? And she said, no, absolutely never.
Yeah.
And she said, it is under for 4 hours. And mm-hmm. just the more I think about that, it just completely freaks me out.
Well, one of the things that should you consider this, the next step is create in your mind a visualization of what you would like those 4 hours to be. Would you like to go on a journey to, the Bali High to be able to find a treasure in that, being your voice, setting boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to be able to see yourself crossing the ocean? Pick up all of the things that give you safety, the trees, the nature, the beauty, the flowers, whatever it may be. And you can work with someone, hon, someone that does, that could help do guided visualization, that could help, whether it's from a clinical standpoint, you could look at maybe a hypnotherapist that could help you with this if that's something you're open to. But you can take that 4-hour time and you can literally start the process of creating in the mind's eye that this isn't surgery, you're going on a journey. And then you can put earphones on with music that is uplifting and that is inspiring, so you won't hear what's going on in the surgery room. A lot of physicians will allow this to happen. And what you'll do is it will be a journey into your deeper self to find the gifts of yourself and then to bring those forward when you come back out of it. And
wow.
Interestingly enough, if you really want to go to the next level, is as you're on this journey and you find something in your visualization that feels safe, and maybe you're fatigued and you're tired and maybe it's getting dark, and that's what a metaphor that happens a lot when we start to go under. We have this apprehension and then it's like we go into this dark area. Well, in that dark area, find safety in there. And then in the web of your hand, either right or left hand, when you find that safety place and you feel comfortable and safe in your body and safe in your environment, or you see something beautiful, then take your thumb and your first finger and literally press on the web of the hand. And what you'll do is that's the highest concentration of neurotransmitters that we have in the body, and you literally anchor and reprogram in your cells that talk immediately to your brain that wow, this darkness is, you know, it's just part of the process, and it can change it. And literally you can start reprogramming via the neurotransmitters and the endorphins that they basically release, and the neurotransmitters that they release and so forth. They really release neurotransmitters. You can literally program yourself to a place of safety. And then what you do is you can also program that when you can, once you come back from your journey, your children are there, they're loving you, they're hugging you, they're smiling, they're laughing. They want to know what it's like, Mom. Tell me what all this is like. And you can share and you find a different voice. You've touched a deep part of you. Those are things that you can do from a psychological standpoint, sweetie. So get your information, explore that. Is that something you can do? Do you need help doing it? Do you want to do it? The most important thing is if you don't want to do this, then, and you find that you do have to do it, you're still going to have that inner irritation, sweetie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Oh, good girl. You cleared your throat. I'm going to help you with it too. All right. Well, I hate to cut you off, Jill, but I've got to go to a commercial break. Sweetie, thank you so much. And thank you for being new to following me and for supporting my work. Light and love to
thank
you.
You.
All
so,
right.
So much,
you are welcome. Okay, Rebecca, let's go ahead and jump to a very quick commercial break. I'm going to be right back and talk a little bit more about what you can do to prepare yourself if you're going to have an organ removed from your body.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now. Toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
Well, welcome back. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and today I've been talking about what happens energetically when you remove an organ from the body. What happens to the emotion that I know is a medical intuitive that gets stored in those organs when it's actually removed? I'm also going to be taking your calls, so if you have a question for me, I invite you to call me at 877-230-3062. I try to get as many calls in an hour as I can, and then sharing information as well as a topic that has been either requested by a listener, in this particular case is Nancy Mueller, or just a topic that it seems like the energetics of what we're dealing with just seems to fit into perfect timing for that. I also wanted to let you know that both the audio and the printable PDF of my August Your Health teleclass is available. The teleclass was on chronic fatigue syndrome. It's now available for purchase on my website at www.ritberger.com. The printable PDF is actually 29 pages long. It's got lots of information on CFS, all the way from a clinical perspective, some of the latest research that's being found, not only on really what triggers it, but also some of the latest research on what is being done to be able to work with it instead of just working with it from a medication standpoint, because there really isn't one medication that can be used to be able to help people that suffer from CFS. The most common is antidepressants, and that has a myriad of its own problems. And what we've found is that in many cases in the research, CFS really isn't a psychological issue around depression like it was thought for so many years, but it really is a physical outcome of an immune system that is suppressed. I also look at the hidden psychological contributors around it, what it looks like in the energy field, how it maps in the chakra system, the role that your personality color plays in the susceptibility of developing it, and then also in this particular teleclass, I have a whole laundry list of suggestions on how to deal with it from an alternative approach. And the reason for this is because the prognosis for healing CFS is really found to be better if someone approaches it from the alternative perspective than it is from really looking at medications. So if you're interested in purchasing either the audio of the actual teleclass or the PDF or both of them, you can purchase them online at my website, www.ritberger.com. And then a new feature that we have on the website is that if you're not sure you really want the audio or you're not really sure that you want the PDF, you can actually go in and listen to an audio preview of the download and then also the first page of the printable PDF. I actually, on my site, www.ritberger.com, if you go to teleclass, you'll get a little menu bar that says teleclass archives. Then what you can do, I actually have 17 different illnesses that I featured on my Your Health teleclass. The teleclasses are free. I've got one coming up the end of September, and it's going to be on prostate cancer. September is Prostate Awareness Month, and so it's going to be on that. It isn't posted to my website at this point in time. Hope to have that up next week, and I hope you'll join me for that. So again, lots of information. Every one of the audio and printable PDFs on ritberger.com actually has a preview to it, so you can listen to it and be sure that it's something that you want to purchase before you want to listen to before you purchase. So what can we do in the case of really coming in and preparing the body if we're going to have to go in, or we choose to? Have to means that sometimes it's in the well-being of the body. We may not be really, you know, wanting to do that, but sometimes the body says, you know, this needs to be removed. Or sometimes, in the cases I was talking with Jill in the first segment, sometimes it's better that we really explore having a situation or an organ or even a gland, in the case of the thyroid that we talked about, removed prior to having it, is going in and doing some of the work. So here's some of the things that you can do, not only in the preparation of surgery, but also to expedite the healing process. At least 2 weeks before the surgery, begin by preparing your body by eating foods that support and build up your immune system. You might want to also look at supplements. You want things as pure as possible, less additives, less sugar, very important. Creating an affirmation tape or a CD that you can listen to before you go into surgery, and then also listen to during surgery. As I mentioned in my conversation with Jill, many more doctors are receptive to you being able to listen to your affirmation tape, to your guided imagery tape that can walk you through this process in the CD. In the case of the surgery that's 4 hours or greater in length, you'll want to do a CD. You certainly have unlimited time that you can do it. Maybe you have an affirmation, a guided imagery. Maybe you have some music and you can alternate that. But one of the things that we've found in the research as far as expediting the healing is that it is very beneficial that a lot of times the person that's being worked on doesn't hear what's going on in the operating room. Now, that doesn't mean that there's all bad things, but sometimes they're talking about what they're going to have for lunch, what they're going to do after they get through here. Sometimes it may be that somebody drops something as far as a surgical instrument and you hear this noise in the background and maybe you hear this gasp. You know, doctors are very sensitive. Surgical room nurses are very sensitive to this, but there's things that you can do as well. Visualizing the organ or gland as being gone and the area left, that whole area, that whole energetically being packed full of self-love, self-forgiveness, self-acceptance. Visualize the cells in that area healthy, happy, and vital. Close that hole up with self-love and then not leave it open to being vulnerable to maybe the emotions that were stored there before. Creating an image of what the emotion is that you're carrying in its unhealthy state and then actually seeing it as it's gone. Seeing it as, you know, that unhealthy. And what is it going to look like when you're going to have it removed? It doesn't have to be unhealthy. It can look very, very healthy. One of the things that works well is working with mandalas. It's drawing an unhealthy look at what this area, this organ looks like, and then side by side in another mandala, look at it from what it looks like healthy. Art therapy is a wonderful healing tool. The day of the surgery, visualize all the old emotions that are associated with that particular organ and gland. Now, if you don't know what those emotions are, then what you can do is my book, Healing Happens With Your Help, The Hidden Meaning Behind Illness. You can go in. I've literally got charts for every organ and gland in the body, the emotions that are associated with it, the attitudes. And then what you can do the day of the surgery, just go in like that last final check before you're packing to go on a trip. You want to go in and you want to visualize all of those emotional remnants and residue and anything that's associated with it. Just pack it in that organ and then say goodbye. Again, by listening to your healing tape or CD, I encourage you to do this actually before the surgery. Then you can turn it off. It prepares you chemically, emotionally, energetically for what's going to happen. And then when you actually get ready to go in prior to going under anesthesia, then you can turn it on and go from there. What you want to do is you want to visualize yourself waking up in a healthy place. The area that you're going to wake up in is filled with self-love, positive emotions, joy, compassion, hope, and happiness. Go in and see that, you know, the room that you're in, if you're in the ICU, which, you know, in most cases, if it's not in and out, you will be. Then what you want to do, ICU for a longer period of time, then what you'll want to do is see that as a happy place. Maybe you have a place in grade school that maybe is kindergarten and all the pictures and things. So use a lot of visualization. 24 hours following the surgery, you want to continue the same process as the day of the surgery. And then what you want to do is just want to step back and you want to watch the doctors be absolutely amazed at how quickly you're healing. This isn't something that is just shared lightly. It's something that in my work, in working with doctors and working with people in clinical trials, in the power of the mind, being able to deal at that emotional level, in my field with psychoneuroimmunology, where we know that emotions impact the immune system, that if we pack that space with happy, joyful, loving emotions, then what it will do is it will support the immune system to literally heal more rapidly. Tremendous, tremendous power in that. So again, those are the things that you can do. I would like to try to get at least Emily, let's start with you, and then Susan, stay on the line, sweetie. I'm going to try to get you also. Hi, Emily for Utah. How are you doing, honey?
I'm good. I have a question about my boys getting their tonsils removed.
Mm-hmm.
They have had chronic strep this last winter.
Yep.
And the oldest one, I have four boys, and two of them have had the chronic strep. And the oldest one. I know, that's the youngest one. I was trying to escape from him real quick.
Don't do that, sweetie. Children are absolutely wonderful. It makes me laugh.
Oh, he is.
It makes me smile. So this is great. Okay.
Oh,
so you've got the two boys.
Yes. Well, the two oldest ones are the ones that have the strep mostly. They're 8 or almost 9 and 7.
Okay.
And then the oldest one has also tonsillitis.
Yes.
Really bad. Like,
yes.
The doctor said he hadn't seen one like that on a teenager only.
Yep.
So he suggested that we remove the tonsils of at least the oldest son and the second oldest, probably. But I just have felt like, I don't know, I just want to make sure, check all the options first.
Okay.
And see what's going on, really.
Absolutely. And that's kind of that last, you know, check balance that we do in the situation. Both of the boys need their tonsils out.
Okay.
And one of the reasons, especially for the second one, is that it is beginning to affect not only with the throat part of it, but it's also beginning to, it's not creating a problem. I want to be really clear. It's not creating a problem, but it could possibly, and is energetically is beginning to affect his ability to be able to hear. His body needs to be able to get this out. His immune system is being overreactive. Have you noticed either he's pulling at his ear or he's scratching his ear? Or anything. Again, there's no problem, sweetie. It's just you asked me from a preventative standpoint, my perception, and that's exactly what it is. He does not have a hearing problem, but he feels like he can get water in it. It can be kind of maybe what I want to call a swimmer's ear. And what that does is it creates another inflammatory response. The oldest boy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. With the oldest boy, hands down, it needs to be done. The great part of it is that he's going to be able to be pampered. He does love to do that, even though he's at this age, like, oh, I'm not sure, Mom, but he does. And, you know, the ice cream and the good things, he'll recover very quickly. Both of your boys will. Of your two other boys, the youngest one is another one that you may have to come up with this decision at some point in time. I don't know that, because this child is just all about truth. This child is like, you know, don't give me a bunch of BS. Don't go in and do all these different things. Say it like it is. Call it like it is. Let's deal with it like it is. And but he does have a physical predisposition based on kind of a family genetic aspect that it may be something at some point in time you'll get to visit as well. But definitely with the two other boys, I would be remiss again if I said, oh no, let's try to do this even energetically from the standpoint, meaning alternatively, I really think that they both need to have them out.
But there's nothing with like the throat chakra that they're not expressing. That's what I was just wondering, is there something going on with them that these things are happening? I know maybe it's not, but.
No. Excuse me for chuckling, because your oldest boy said, you know, I probably need to be quiet for a while.
Okay. Yeah.
And then your youngest, the second one, is saying, you know, I probably need to listen more and I probably need to speak up more. Those are the only things I'm picking up with them, sweetie. The oldest one feels. Yeah, the oldest one feels like, you know, just a lot to say. Some frustration around the fact a lot to say and not people are listening to him. He's trying to help people with problems. They don't always take his advice, even though, you know, he knows that he's absolutely right around it. So, you know, that's kind of what it is.
Oh, good. Okay. It sounds like him. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So again, I'm not, it's just something that your doctor is right. They should both be taken out. The fact that they're the age that they are, they haven't come in, even the oldest boy, is it to a place where it's really impacting other parts of his body and the immune system and so forth. So it's a good idea to get it before, to take them out before he gets older. And then it can be something that could potentially compromise the immune system, suppress it. And, you know, we just never know where those kind of things are going to go. Think of, it's kind of like I was talking with, Jill in the first segment. The tonsils are literally another part of the toxic dump site. And, you know, they just literally just once in a while, we need to just kind of go in and do our job on them. And that's what it needs to be. The younger boy. Yeah. Go ahead, sweet.
Well, once they're out, is there anything that I should do to help? Like, since that isn't there anymore, just to have them do a little cleanse, or I don't know, anything else?
Well, yeah, just go in before they do it, just, you know, help build up their immune system, you know, get them to eat red, greens, orange, yellows, fruits and vegetables as much as you can. You might want to look at, you know, looking at some barley green or something that will alkaline their body, that will help their immune system. Afterwards, you know, they're both very resilient. They're in very, very good health. You know, it's going to be like, okay, that's done. Next, let's move on.
Okay. Good.
Good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. Okay. Thank you. Susan, honey, I have only got a minute. And if we could, I can ask two things. Is that I can ask you to call me back and I will look for your name and so will Miss Rebecca, or can I do it in less than a minute? Help guide
you,
my love.
We'll try it in a minute.
Okay.
I've been having horrible fatigue beginning, you know, I go to work and then at 4 o'clock, okay, I have a low thyroid. I said my endocrinologists are not treating me correctly. Last week I went to save my money, went to a thyroid specialist. I've gone on new meds. I think I'm getting better. He found I had a vitamin D deficiency. He wants to do some adrenal tests in November. My question to you is, am I on the right track to recovery?
You are on the right track to recovery. Absolutely, absolutely. Keep on doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Just
keep going to
the doctor.
You know, just keep on doing these things that you're doing. Don't get the doctor out of the loop, but just keep on doing what you're doing. It's working really wonderful. It's working on your adrenals. Thank you, Susan. Very good for you to be able to do that. Okay, all of you, thank you so much for joining me. You can get the archive of this on my website. Thank you. Light and love to all of you. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you next week on the radio.
You've been listening to The Carol Rideberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com. See you soon.